Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. This is how the Washington Post recent headline characterizes things at the Synod on the family that the Vatican has been holding for some time now. First reports on hot button issues from Pope Francis's meeting reveal deep divisions. I've seen a lot of stuff floating around in the headlines about how things aren't going well, how there's disagreements in the Synod on the family over these hot button issues. What are the issues, and are those headlines, are they overblown? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. James Hitchcock will join us. We're going to be talking about the Vatican's Synod on the Family and whether or not we're hearing some accurate stories coming out of it. It's a secret meeting, so it's difficult to get the news, but it's in the news nonetheless. Dr. James Hitchcock is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. I'm always glad to be here.
The headline from the Washington Post is marked by deep divisions. That's their term. Is that accurate, and what are they talking about?
I believe it is accurate, although it's very difficult to tell for sure, because the efforts have been made to try to keep, if you want to call them, leaks. And then there are some bishops who say, oh, everything is going very well. We have some disagreements, but, you know, we're approaching these in a very constructive way. You have others who sort of say, no, the lines are rather strictly drawn here. I'm inclined to think it's the latter. The two issues that come up most commonly are the issue of divorce and the issue of so-called homosexual marriage, in which there appear to be some bishops at the Synod who favor some sort of an accommodation with both of those. There's also here an issue of what is called in Catholic theology, ecclesiology, the nature of the church. How do we determine these matters? How does the truth determined, and so forth? So those are some of the issues which I think are going on, but you can't rely on a lot of the reports that are coming out.
To your knowledge, are the disagreements, and this is maybe a subtle point, are the disagreements over the church's teaching or over what I would call, for lack of a better term, Dr. Hitchcock, the pastoral application of the church's teaching?
Yeah, that is basically claimed by those people who would be categorized, for word of a better word, as liberals. We affirm this teaching, but we apply it in a charitable way. But again, it's kind of difficult to do that. For example, the divorce issue. If a man has been divorced and remarried a second time, and if theoretically the church says you're not really married, then do you admit him to communion? The liberals want to say, yes, we do. This is the pastoral approach. But does that not sort of negate the idea that he is not really involved in a legitimate marriage? That would be even more obvious in the case of, say, a homosexual couple. If they're admitted to communion, then how can you say that the church disapproves of this in a moral sense?
So can you just give us an idea in broad terms what the subjects and where maybe the lines may lie between the people participating in the Vatican Synod on the Family, what they are? What is this meeting about?
The Synod, as you say, was called on the subject of the family. There have been many interventions that we know about, of people saying we need to support the family, it's under attack, it's weakening, we must do everything we can to support the family. There is an element, which I think is the minority, that sees this as an opportunity to really introduce some modifications in the official teaching. And that is what has caused all the problem. Now, we could get into a whole interesting area here when you say, what are the divisions? Almost all the liberal sentiment comes from Western Europe, particularly Germany, and maybe some elements in the United States, with the strongest opposition coming from Africa and some other third world countries. It's kind of an interesting flip-flop, because the liberal position for a long time has been to say, we've got to listen to the third world, which no one denies. But now all of a sudden the voice of the third world is being heard, and some of the Western liberals don't really want to hear it.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned there Germany, the kind of fomenting for the liberal, maybe even changing some church teaching. That most people would associate German Roman Catholicism with its most, its golden son, which would be Cardinal Ratzinger, former Pope.
Yes. Well, he was in the end, sort of came to be at odds with most of the other German bishops. The lead is being here is given to Cardinal Kasper, a German bishop who then served in Rome for a while. Cardinal Marx of, I guess it's Cologne, I forget which one. Now, there's a cynical view of this. They have in Germany a church tax, and each church receives from the government a certain subsidy each year for the number of people that are on their rolls as members. If you're excommunicated, or let's say you're excluded from communion and you're not appearing on the church rolls, this is going to reduce the amount of the subsidy. Now, I don't think the German bishops are completely cynical in this regard, but I think that does enter into it. Now, a bigger factor here is that the rate of church attendance in Germany is very low. Same is true of most of the Western European countries. History has shown, I think, over and over again, this country the same way. You try to liberalize your doctrines to appeal to people. That doesn't lead them to come rushing back to the church again. It simply confirms their belief that what you're teaching is not quite right. So I think the fact that the German church has been one of the most liberal churches for a long time is, in fact, a contributing factor to the low rate of church attendance.
Then what is Francis, either his presence there or his, well, when you're Pope, your influence is felt far beyond your immediate presence. How does he play into a factor in these disagreements?
That is the $64,000 question for which I do not have a definitive answer. There seems to be a general impression that he is sympathetic to the liberals. He has made numerous gestures of let's reach out to people, let's build bridges, not walls, etc. On the other hand, he has given a number of addresses and sermons in which he has strongly affirmed the traditional teaching. So it's a little bit, he's a very impulsive man, I think. And so it's sometimes hard to difficult to say where he's going to be on this. Then we get back to ecclesiology again. As Pope, is he going to sort of try to dictate the outcome of the synod? Well, not really. He can't. That's contrary to the whole structure of the thing. So what's going to happen? We are not going to get, I think, a very clear view of what emerges from the synod. It's going to continue to be leaks and reports without official confirmation.
Is there a report? Is there some sort of product that is issued at the end or the conclusion of a synod like this, a synod on the family, that will tell us at least after the fact how things went?
Yes, but I think I get the impression not for a while. All of this is somewhat vague. Earlier synods, under John Paul particularly, after it was over, the Pope himself would synthesize the discussions and then issue a document. Now, it's been emphasized in this synod, this is not a parliament. We're not being we're not going to court a majority rule here. We have little discussion groups. We're going to try to summarize and synthesize the opinions of the various members and put them together into a single document. I don't think that Francis intends to do that. For one thing, he's not a theologian. So it's going to be done by a committee. So then you begin to hear, well, has this committee been stacked? Is it reliable? And I think it's really, to tell you the truth, rather vague. And we'll probably get some kind of a document, but I think not immediately after the Senate is over.
Let's return to the subject of the Southern Hemisphere bishops here, and that that's not only a factor because they are actually speaking with some pretty strong influence here, but they also, in the future going ahead, will likely represent the population epicenter of Roman Catholicism. How does that play into it?
Yes, that's absolutely the case. Now, the Hispanics are, you know, all over the world, you take all the Hispanic countries, they do constitute by far the largest majority of Catholics. But the African church, as you say, is growing very rapidly. There's a lot of awareness of the fact that we have to be very seriously paying attention to them. They have made some really excellent points. Some of the African bishops is, look, we had to overcome things like polygamy and so forth in order to become Catholics and remain faithful to our religion. The last thing we need, they talk about colonialism. The last thing we need is Westerners coming in and telling us that we should adopt Western customs. When President Obama went, I think it was to Kenya a few years ago, he said the idea of homosexuality was an achievement of Western civilization that should be respected. And he was severely rebuked by a lot of the African clergy, both Catholic and Protestant. Now, the Hispanic world is less, it seems much more, if you want to call it, divided as to where it stands. And of course, when you say the Hispanic world or the African world, you're necessarily talking about their ecclesiastical leaders. We don't have a clear way of determining majority rule, even if that is considered to be relevant.
Is this a tool in some ways?
Pardon me?
Is this a tool in some ways for Francis, who's still new to the job, relatively speaking, to get a feel for the landscape of worldwide Catholicism on these issues?
Well, I think he certainly will get some sense of that if he hadn't had it before. He was, of course, without international experience. He had spent virtually his entire life in Argentina. He made trips abroad, obviously, but he never served in the Vatican in Rome. He was never a papal diplomat. His knowledge of languages, I think, is quite limited. So, yeah, I think he does have a learning curve with regard to the international church. I have no idea what he thought about the Africans before this. I would think that he's realized now that there are here certain difficulties. Now, we might say something else about the Synod, and that is, what is its authority? If we assume what some people consider the worst case, that the Synod does somehow come out with a document that justifies divorce or justifies homosexual relationships, that really is not binding on the church. It's not, does not have the authority of an ecumenical council, which was the Second Vatican Council of the early 1960s. Synods come and go, and if you study the history of the church going all the way back to early centuries, some synods were considered in retrospect to be having defended orthodoxy, and other synods seem to have fallen into heresy. So it isn't going to be a permanently binding document, but it's going to be a very influential document whichever way it goes.
Dr. James Hitchcock is our guest. He'll be with us for about another 10 minutes on the other side of the break. We're talking about the Vatican Synod on the Family on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 21st. He's Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. We'll be right back.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in store, cph.org and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. IssuesETC.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Vatican's Synod on the Family. Dr. James Hitchcock, Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University, is our guest. Dr. Hitchcock, I'd like your response to a couple of things here. First of all, there's a recent story from the Religion News Service out of Vatican City essentially saying, look, there was a letter that was signed by 13 cardinals. It was leaked. Some of the cardinals who reportedly signed it were Houston Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, Timothy Dolan, and then the ringleader apparently is supposed to be Australian Cardinal George Pell. And they're being accused by signing this, they're being accused of preemptively trying to discredit the Synod's outcome. What do you know about this?
Well, all I know is what I read in the paper, and it's a perfect example of all the confusion that circles around. There was a letter, obviously. One or two people say, no, I didn't sign it. Cardinal Pell says, yes, we did have a letter, but the quote that has appeared in the press is inaccurate. Who leaked the letter? That's a very interesting question. Whose interest does it serve to leak it? And I don't really know. I can see how it could serve the interest of both sides in the controversy. It was addressed to the Pope. And apparently was a protest against what they considered some of the procedures, that everybody wasn't being given an adequate opportunity to express themselves, and how was the final document to be written. So, as I say, I don't think you can conclude very much from the existence of the letter because it's shrouded in fog.
So what it's being portrayed as is evidence that the cardinals and the bishops who are representing the traditional Catholic position are overplaying their hand.
Yes, that was the claim that was made. I remember it was a man named David Gibson, who's a reporter, and he said, well, they had a strong position, especially because of the intervention of the Africans, but they've overplayed it. Well, that's his opinion. You know, it's like politics in Washington, where the journalists cultivate particular politicians, and then when a journalist writes something, well, he's getting across what a particular politician wants people to understand. So who is David Gibson talking to? He's obviously reflecting a liberal interpretation of this letter. I would say it's fair to say that the vast majority of the secular press, and even the liberal religious press, wants the church to change its teachings, thinks that the church should change its teaching. So I don't think that the media in that regard is going to be a very reliable guide to what's happening.
There has been several of the participants who have been very outspoken in the public in any event, not speaking directly to what's happening inside the Synod, but commenting on it outside the Synod. One of them, Philadelphia Archbishop Charles Chaput, who simply says, "We can't rewrite or overlook what Jesus requires in order to follow him." He goes on to say, "The more some Synod fathers claim that no doctrinal change is sought on matters of divorce and remarriage, only a change in quote-unquote discipline, the more other Synod fathers worry, and for good reason," he says, "practice inevitably shapes belief." What is Archbishop Chaput saying there?
Well, it goes back to the question you asked earlier about the doctrine and pastoral practice. And what he's saying, I think, is it's not possible to significantly change pastoral practice without affecting doctrine. You know, people are going to say, well, it can't be so bad if you're allowing people in a homosexual relationship to go to communion. Now, what Archbishop Chaput's statement, of course, does confirm, contrary to what others claim, that there are these sharp divisions. Archbishop Worrell, or Cardinal Worrell of Washington, has been saying, oh, no, we're all getting along. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful spirit of harmony. I think Archbishop Chaput's comments seem to indicate that that's not true. And common sense, of course, tells us that it's not true.
So when all is said and done, what do you expect to be the outcome of this, of the Vatican Synod on the family?
I hate to say this, but my fear is it's just going to become confusion. They're going to be the same thing happened after Vatican II, but in the case of Vatican II, there were very precise statements that were issued, and you could be analyzed and so forth. I think we're going to have people saying, "Oh no, at the synod they said that." Oh no, they didn't. Oh yes, they did. Our Pope Francis says, "Well, that's what he also said." So I'm afraid it's going to be, unfortunately, confusion. I can't see that whatever may have been the idea in the beginning, I can't see that this is really going to serve a very good purpose. I'm sorry to say that, but I think it's true.
Is Francis? He is, after all, if nothing else, he is the face and the spokesman. After all of the dust settles, all of these archbishops and cardinals go their way, he's the one left with the microphone stuck in his face. Is he, in your opinion, capable of clarifying this, of doing what you said before, kind of digesting it, and then, at least for good or for ill, giving us a clear idea of what happened, in addition to what he must do after that, which is try and maintain some harmony among these divided leaders?
Yes, that seems to me to be what we need. I fear that, first of all, Francis is not a theologian. I think he's somewhat impatient with what he sees as theoretical formulations, which are not, don't touch people where they live. I also think that he would be impatient, even attempting to do such a thing. If you pay attention to his numerous speeches, and not just the public speeches like when he came to the United States, but his daily sermons, when he says Mass every morning and he preaches a sermon, you could make a case for his saying quite almost contradictory things in different situations. I don't think it's because he's incapable of clear thinking, but I think he's kind of carried along by a great zeal. And he says things as soon as they occur to him, and he hasn't stopped to think, well, how do I reconcile that with what I might have said last week? So I don't think we're going to get clarification from him. Now, the opposite of what you just said is there's apparently been talk at the Synod of decentralizing the church. And there's been talk about that for a long time. And so, okay, the Synod didn't resolve anything, so the bishops go back home, and each national hierarchy deals with it as best they can. That may, practically speaking, what may happen, but it seems to indicate that these teachings are merely a matter of cultural practice, you know. So, okay, the Africans don't like this. Well, but the Germans do. And it's not a very good way, but that may be what happens also, you know, that there will be no definitive clarification.
So I guess what I'm wondering here is, are we looking at the very least, attempts to bring about some really rather radical changes in the church's teaching and practice on those narrow issues being discussed there?
Oh, there's no question about it. Cardinal Casper, Cardinal Marx, whom I mentioned before, Cardinal Madariaga of Honduras, you could go down the line, are on public record in this respect. They've made no bones about it. And then you've equally got outspoken people who are saying the opposite. As is usually the case, of course, there appears to be a vast middle. Where do they stand? But I think this is a dangerous situation which we find ourselves. The salvation here would be, again, that the Synod does not have absolutely binding authority. And if by some chance, I don't think it'll happen, but if by some chance the Synod comes out with a document calling for radical changes here in the practices and even the teachings, it isn't binding. I mean, as a historian as a student of church history, again, I say numerous synods throughout history, going back to early centuries, which made serious mistakes, and then another synod comes along and kind of tries to undo what the previous synod did. I don't think it's very healthy to be in that situation, but it may be the situation we're in.
Dr. James Hitchcock is Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for your time, bringing a little clarity to what is arguably a very confusing situation. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to go back to your email and to the Issues Etc. comment line. You can join us with questions or comments in the last half hour of the program, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us that email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Or our comment line, 618-223-8382. Your email and your comments after this.
The church's music from the second century. The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan, in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's lciw.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at lciw.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Common and experienced firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.